on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
Now, special guest host, Jeff Pickle.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I'm pretty with these old boots on.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jennifer Campbell Show. Once again, Jeff Pickle here filling in for Jennifer all through this week. Jennifer will be back Monday morning, both on Country 106.7 and, of course, right here on the Jennifer Campbell Show. Only fitting. She's here to host. But I'm having a great time filling in this week. We had some great conversations so far. We're going to have some great conversations today. Looking forward to today's show. And let's get right into it. Yesterday, a landmark decision at the Regional Police Services Board meeting. The board agreed to accept the recommendations made by the Sexual Assault Task Force that found regional police needed to overhaul the way they investigate sexual assaults. This comes as the result of an investigative report in the Globe and Mail that found a shockingly high number of sexual assault cases were classified as unfounded right across Ontario. Now, police across Ontario have been tasked with reviewing their practices, and regional police have done that and have made a commitment to do better. One of the key members of the task force, Sarah Castleman, the executive director of the Sexual Assault Center. Sarah presented yesterday at the board meeting. I'm pleased to have her join me on the show now. Sarah, thanks for joining me. Sorry, get your volume up here. Sarah, thanks for taking the time this morning.
I'm happy to be here.
So yesterday, obviously, a big day for the task force and for everything that you guys have been working on over the last several months. How big of a moment was this for you in the groups you work with to have regional police and the board accept the recommendations made and look to be moving forward in a positive way as a result of that work you've done?
Yeah, yesterday was pretty much the culmination of more than a year of work. So it was good to have the board accept all our recommendations and accept a new model moving forward for how survivor advocates such as ourselves are engaged in reviewing sexual assault cases on a regular basis. So it was a pretty big day for our sector and for our community and for survivors that are in our community.
And I gave a bit of a history of how this all came to be, but maybe explain how you became involved in this task force, how it was created, and kind of what task you were set out with finding from the beginning.
Yeah, so you shared a bit about the Globe and Mail investigative series in February 2017, and Robin Doolittle was the main investigator there. She looked at police responses all across Canada. She filed a whole bunch of Freedom of Information requests to get a lot of data, and she found that across Canada, 19.4% of sexual assaults were classified as unfounded by police. And unfounded is a police classification that means a crime was neither attempted nor occurred. So that's basically the headline of the main article she wrote. She wrote a whole series of articles, and it was called Will the Police Believe You? And our community had a 27% unfounded rate, so higher than the national average. But just to be clear, the national average of 19.4% is very problematic. So this article, which was actually amplifying the voices of community-based sexual assault centers like ourselves, because we've been talking about high unfounded rates for years. It amplified our voices and put it on the national radar like it had never been before. So in our community, the chief of police established a task force to look at this issue. And then we broke off into two subcommittees. So there was a subcommittee that was doing an audit of past cases, and there was a subcommittee that was looking at developing an improved model of police response moving forward. So yesterday, the board, the Police Services Board, approved both of the models, or approved the audit and the model moving forward.
And let's talk about that model. Well, we can, I guess, chat about both, specifically in the audit, what was found here. We see the number and the headlines yesterday and today being that one in four, roughly speaking, one in four of those unfounded cases was found to be something problematic in the investigation. Can you explain to me a little bit more about what was found to be problematic within those investigations?
Yes. So we found that 26% of the time we had concerns, and that if we were doing a regular review like we'll be doing in the future, we would have sent those cases back to police. And then there was another 14% on top of that where the case was either incomplete or inadequate to the degree that we couldn't make a case determination. So in those cases, there was a wide range of things. There was evidence sometimes of gender bias within the investigation. Other times there was evidence of a misunderstanding of the law. So an example of that would be the law around consent to sexual activity. So, you know, at times there was confusion around if someone had said no and someone had proceeded. That's a sexual assault right there. But at a certain point, if that person started to comply for a variety of reasons, fear, threats, sometimes we saw that the police would interpret compliance with consent, and that would confuse the two. And that is actually a very clear distinction in the law. So we saw some evidence of that. We also saw evidence that officers needed to be trained in trauma-informed investigative techniques. So a quick example of that would be historically when someone came to report a sexual assault, the officer would say, start at the beginning, tell me everything that happened, don't leave anything out. And what happens when someone has experienced a traumatic experience is that their memories aren't lined up that way. And often their stories come out very disjointed, disconnected, inconsistent. And that used to be interpreted as someone lying. And what we know now is that's often the impact of trauma. So you need to learn proper investigative techniques to bring out the stories and experiences of those that have experienced trauma.
And so from these, I guess, deficiencies, you can say, in some of the investigations, that's where the recommendations come from. And maybe I think they're kind of mostly around, as you mentioned, around training, around the training of officers and investigations. Can you give me a sense of what some of those major points are as far as the recommendations go?
Yeah, the audit itself was mostly about looking for areas where we could train and improve training to improve investigation. So one of the things that the police is going to implement is they're having Dr. Lori Haskell, who's very well known for her work around trauma and trauma-informed investigations, come in and train officers on how to do trauma-informed interviews. So that's something that's happening in the fall or September, I think. There's a number of different...
Do we lose you there? Sorry. Okay, yeah, we got you back again. Sorry.
Got me back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not sure exactly how much you heard, so I'll start with the recommendations. One of the recommendations is around having trauma-informed training on how to do investigations. So that's happening in the fall. And then one of the other recommendations is implementing a model moving forward in our community where survivor advocates such as ourselves review sexual assault files every quarter and make recommendations to police about either reopening cases or where someone might need more training. And the board approved that model. So starting next, the beginning of 2019, every quarter, there'll be a group of us from Violence Against Women agencies in the community that are actually, that have full access to police files, that review them and work with the police to try and improve responses.
So overall, is this, you know, how would you grade regional police's response to, you know, the situation that was presented in front of them? Is this a passing grade? Is this big steps forward? Is there anything being left out that you would like to see them do or like to see them include as we move forward?
You know, as advocates, there's always things that we would try and move forward and enhance further. But honestly, it is a pretty big step forward and a pretty big win that we have the police agreeing to the recommendations that we provided and the police opening their files to us in the future so that we can work together to try and improve responses. It really, you know, stepping back, it really is a big moment. And this model that we developed for our community is based on a model that they had in Philadelphia that improved unfounded rates from 18%, so not that dissimilar to what Canada's overall rates are, and they brought it down to 4% with this model.
Wow.
So it is really a best practice, and it's very exciting to see it roll out. And I couldn't have imagined 3 years ago that we'd be in this position and working the way that we are. So we'll continue to advocate. We'll continue to push the whole role of having violence against women and feminist advocates reviewing files is to try and set the bar higher, because across Canada, charge rates for sexual assault haven't improved in 30 years. Reporting rates have actually been slowly declining across Canada in 30 years. But there is a huge systemic issue that we need to address. In Canada, for every 33 sexual assaults that are reported to police, there are only 3 convictions. And so there's a lot of room for improvement in our criminal justice system overall.
Absolutely. A lot of distance to go, but certainly, as you mentioned, a significant and a big step taken forward yesterday, and hopefully those trends continue. Sarah, thanks so much for the work you and the task force has done on this portfolio. Obviously, as you said, almost a year's worth of very hard work, and we thank you for that, and thank you for joining me on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, excellent. Once again, that is Sarah Castleman, the Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Support Center in Waterloo Region. That's a good line there, and I think a good summary of things, a major step forward, but it's clearly still a long ways to go. That's a very sobering statistic that only 3 out of 33 reported sexual assaults end in a conviction, a number. Certainly that some of these steps taken today can help improve. If the number of complaints that are found to be credible is able to reduce from that number of 27% down to 4%, there'll be more investigations. More investigations will lead to more convictions in a better situation. A very, very big step forward, and very hard work done by that whole task force, a group of 6 or 7 people involved in that and writing that audit, and then those recommendations, 11 in all, including starting a committee that can review unfounded cases and, you know, potentially send them back to be re-looked at and reinvestigated if there was a deficiency found in that investigation. So more accountability on the side of regional police. And also important to note that in that report that the task force sent, they did include that in many of these cases, so we're just talking about unfounded cases. So a subsect of, you know, the entirety of the sexual assaults reported. These are the unfounded cases they're looking at. They did find many examples of great police work and great investigative work, and they put that in the report that these there are certainly cases where they were investigated to their fullest extent, but also clearly situations where they were not done that. And we have the one side. We certainly have from the task force now speaking, and on the Mike Farwell Show at 11, we'll hear from regional police and Chief Brian Larkin what he has to say about the task force. This task force was presented by Chief Larkin. It was the idea, the creation of regional police, and now they've agreed to adopt all the recommendations and the findings found in the audit moving forward. So some good news there. We'll have more on that at 11 on the Mike Farwell Show. We're going to take a quick break here on the Jennifer Campbell Show, and when we come back, we want to talk about Doug Ford and the PC government, certainly not wasting any time dropping some large bombshells on us here. We're going to chat about that. When we come back, phone lines will be open, 519-570-2545, star 570. Give me a call. We'll chat right after this.
Don't look at your phone. Just listen to us.
Monitoring every traffic source for your safest, fastest traffic solutions. Your traffic team is 570 News, Kitchener's breaking news, traffic, and weather station.
Back with the Jennifer Campbell Show. Jeff Pickle here filling in. Before the break, I said phone lines are open, 519-570-2545. We want to give a, sometimes they do the 100-day report card for a new premier or a prime minister, president, whatever it may be. Let's give the one-day report card because it's been a big, now one, I guess, going into our second day officially of sitting of the new government. Some major bombshell announcements happening. The two that we heard yesterday was the scrapping of the new sex ed curriculum and reverting back to the old sex ed curriculum, the one that was in place, first drafted in 1998, the first year that Google was created that same year, to give it an age reference. So clearly, some of the dangers of young people online not included in that curriculum. That's the worry that many teachers, many parents have about having that information not taught in schools. There's a lot of concerns. Many people thinking that's definitely a step backwards, but it was a campaign promise, and Doug Ford certainly living up to that. We also heard yesterday that the board of Hydro One is resigning. Doug said he'd do it, and it's done. What if that will mean anything for gas prices, yet to be clear, but hey, once again, there's a campaign promise, and for better or for worse, it's kept up. We also have scrapping of the carbon tax, which we heard about earlier this week, and with that, again, also that means $100 million less for school repairs. So, and that's the article I was looking at, an editorial in the Toronto Star, looking at the good or bad with the very active premier in his first couple of days, certainly living up to campaign promises. But what many people in the province are certainly saying is, maybe wish he didn't quite live up to those, didn't quite act the way he said he was going to be on the campaign trail. We're so used to politicians making campaign promises and not doing them, saying, even if he said something that's worrying to me, like he won't actually do that. It's just something you say on the campaign trail. Well, they are getting done, folks. These things are getting done. And obviously many people applauding, many more people concerned about what's going on. And we'll have more, a lot of that, again, on the Mike Farwell Show. I'm just here. I just wanted to, as I told James and Mike before the show, I just want to shake the can here during the Jennifer Campbell Show. Shake the can, get everyone prepped and warmed up, and then let everything explode when Mike takes over. Because I feel like phone lines will be lighting up today. A lot of things to talk about today. And later on the program right here on the Jennifer Campbell Show, the next topic I'm going to talk about coming up at 9:30. We've heard a lot about the safe consumption sites and the backlash towards some of those proposed locations, the candidate locations. I talked about a little earlier in this week on this very program, the kind of epicenter of that backlash taking place in Cambridge and in Galt. And there's a protest planned on Friday protesting those proposed locations for safe consumption sites in Cambridge, in Galt. Now there's a counter protest, a group of people showing up who support safe consumption, support it in the general area where it's most needed, being the Galt core. And they're hoping to rally people together to demonstrate, to show the support for that side. So that's going to come up right after the news on at 9:30. We're going to chat about that. And it's an interesting conversation because the loud voices we've heard, the most loud voices, have certainly been from those in opposition to safe consumption, yet you hear a lot more of the quieter voices, certainly the voices of regional council and two of the three city councils in the region talking about support for the sites, even Cambridge City Council talking about the idea of safe consumption being a potentially good plan. It's just the location that they're picking an issue with. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what becomes of these demonstrations. And the more quiet voice so far in this argument has been the pro-safe consumption site, but certainly a group of people are trying to make that voice a little more organized and a little more heard. We're going to get into that with one of the organizers of this counter-protest right after the news. And let's do that now. We'll head to the news. We'll be back with more conversation on safe consumption sites in Cambridge when we get back right after this.
Now you can listen to 570 News on your Sonos speakers or any Google Chromecast-enabled device like Google Home or nearby TV with the free Radio Player Canada app.
In the car, tune in using Radio Player on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Radio Player Canada, it's where Canadian radio plays.
Welcome back to the Jennifer Campbell Show. Thanks so much to my first guest, Sarah Castleman from the Sexual Assault Support Center in Waterloo Region. A big day yesterday for the task force that she is working on and for regional police, moving ahead with some recommendations to improve the way the police service investigates sexual assault. So clearly a big day for everyone, and certainly she mentioned a lot of work to go, but not to minimize the step that we've made yesterday and the improvements that will come from that. Now, just before the break, I mentioned we'll be talking about the proposed safe consumption sites in Cambridge. The controversy around those sites in Waterloo Region is heating up. Cambridge, in particular, downtown Galt, has been the epicenter of this debate. A vocal group of residents and city council have clearly demonstrated they do not want a safe consumption site in Galt's core, despite it being classified as a hotspot of drug use and overdoses. The group is planning to protest regional council's proposal to put a safe consumption site in Galt. That protest planned for this Friday. Now, a counter demonstration, those who support safe consumption sites hope to attend and support their side and support of safe consumption sites in our region. One of the organizers of that counter-protest, Ryan O'Hagan, is a member of the Cambridge Harm Reduction Alliance. He's helping organize this demonstration. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having me.
So why did you decide there needs to be this counter-demonstration going on to the protest already happening, the protest speaking out against these proposed sites? Why did you decide there needed to be a demonstration, you know, looking to counter what they're saying on the other side?
Yeah, the reason that we came to the conclusion that we needed to have a counter protest was simply because we were hearing a lot of misinformation being spread from those that are opposed to the site. A lot of people that haven't necessarily done the research and see this as nothing more than, and I'm quoting people here, but handing out needles to junkies. And that's not really what a safe consumption site is about, and that's not the point of them. And all research that's been done, all peer-reviewed research that's been done, let me rephrase, shows that they are incredibly beneficial and they have huge benefits to the community that uses. And in fact, to the communities that don't use and live in those areas.
And that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about. What have you heard as someone who's been obviously done some study in this area and has been reading, and certainly someone who's, you know, committed to harm reduction strategies? What have you been hearing from those who are opposed to safe consumption sites that you find worrisome?
My biggest concern, it actually isn't the misinformation. I mean, that is a massive issue, and it's something that I want to address. But my personal biggest concern are the number of people who believe that the lives of those who use, or those that are afflicted with addiction, or in many cases mental health in general, are simply not worth as much as the lives of those of us who don't. And that is a big part of my concern. I mean, we know that a large portion of opioid-addicted users became that way because they had their wisdom teeth removed and were prescribed opioids, or because they had a major surgery and were prescribed opioids. So that's my personal biggest pet peeve, are those things that are said about folks dealing with mental health and addictions afflictions. But some of the things that we've been hearing that are simply factually untrue are that it will be dangerous for children. So a lot of concern with one of the sites being so close to a school, and concern that, you know, my children will have to see this natural, or not natural, sorry, this part of everyday life that is a thing in the region of Waterloo. We know it's a thing. But all the research shows that there's actually no detriment to the community at large. And that's one of the biggest pieces of misinformation that tends to get spread.
And I know, you know, that's certainly one of the things. I think we are perusing the same Facebook page where most of the this protest seems to kind of compile. And I do see both those. I do see there's certain arguments made about just specifically about the location being close to a school, but there is that other certain segment of, as you mentioned, people who are, you know, using, or people who would be using these safe consumption sites not being worthy of the cost that it would take to build a safe consumption site, or that being their fault. And, you know, you talk about site location, and I've always been a big sticking point for me, because the city of Cambridge has taken a line that says, no, we do support the idea of safe consumption site, just not in the downtown core areas. In your study and your research, what you've heard about, know about the situation, how important is site location to the successful nature of a safe consumption site?
Well, I want to touch on a couple of points here, Jeff, if you don't mind.
So, absolutely.
I want to kind of go back a second, because, you know, we were talking about a specific Facebook page where they're having all of these concerns, and I think you mentioned the actual cost as one of the major concerns. And we've got research. I mean, there have been, the number's over 100 peer-reviewed articles now on InSight alone in Vancouver. And we know that in Vancouver, all the research is showing that safe consumption sites actually save money. They don't add to taxpayers' costs. For every $1 spent on a safe consumption site, $4 to $5 are saved from public health. So we know that this is actually a cost reduction strategy as well as harm reduction, and that's really important to get on board with. What was the actual question you just asked me there, Jeff? Sorry.
That's a good question. That was a few minutes ago. I think the question the sticking point that I always have is about location and the importance of location of the site itself.
Right. So, this is where my personal views really differ from those in that specific Facebook group that we were just talking about. You know, their big thing is rehabilitation. We should be funding rehabilitation. What they don't realize is that it's actually really hard to get to the people that need it. Sure, there are obvious users on the street at times. Don't get me wrong. It's sometimes obvious to tell. However, that is actually not the bulk of users. I mean, a lot of people don't seem to realize that users can have everyday jobs like you and me. Users can blend in with society quite well. And we know that the best way to get them into rehabilitation, or to get them onto drug treatment plans, or to get them to stop using in general, is to find them. And if we're setting up a site that is, I don't know, 10 kilometers outside of their using radius, that's not actually helping us at all. It's not getting us the people that we need to get to. So while I understand some of the concerns with having it in Galt and having it in a downtown core area, because actually the bylaw prohibits from Preston and Hespler's downtown cores as well, I don't think that it actually benefits people to have it in a place that's not in those hotspot using areas.
Yeah. You know, another thing I know I've mentioned before, and I think we kind of discussed this a little bit when we were messaging to set this interview up, is the fact that, you know, this does have support from a lot of the different levels of government. From, you know, they will grant exemptions in the federal level. Provincial governments did certainly have support and do in other, yet to be seen what route the current provincial government's going to take, but at our municipal levels there has been support. So clearly there's some public support there as well. But we've talked a little bit about voices being drowned out. Do you think there are a lot more people in support of safe consumption sites, just it doesn't have quite the same volume level to the support?
So what I'll tell you is that I am part of another Facebook group, a group that is certainly not more in favor of safe consumption sites as a whole, but a group that is much more open to dialogue and discourse that is actually beneficial and helps move along this conversation. And we have people within our own group who are not necessarily 100% in favor of safe consumption sites. Some of them are on the fence still and they're not sure. Some of them say that we should have one, but it shouldn't necessarily be in this particular place because they don't like how close it is to the school. But we have people who are very willing or very open to listening to each other. And I think that's what's really important here.
Yeah. Ryan, I appreciate you taking the time to join me this morning on the program and talk about this. If people are interested in getting involved with the counter demonstration you're putting on, or just the groups that you're involved with supporting the harm reduction and safe consumption, how can they have that voice be heard?
So I would ask people to join Working Together Toward the Cleaner Cambridge Facebook page. That's Facebook group. That's a pretty solid group with some really good dialogue and discussion. I would also, if they're interested in getting involved with the counter protest on Friday, that's happening from 5 to 9 in the same location as the original protest. And they can also like the page, the Cambridge Harm Reduction Alliance. So, we'd love to see more support come out. I mean, I think there's a very loud, what I'm hoping is a minority that have been very vocal against safe consumption sites. But I'll tell you, just from the last 2 days, the number of private messages that I've received from people that are interested in coming to the counter protest is pretty incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff, Ryan. Ryan.
Before I hang up, can I give you a couple of really quick facts? Just things that I've looked through for this interview that I wanted to make sure become public knowledge. At least one person hearing will hear this.
Sure.
There was a study published by, the Canadian Medical Association that found that for every $1 put into SCS, 4 to 5 is saved. So we spoke about that. The Overdose Monitoring Alert and Response System, which is something that's run by the region of Waterloo, I believe, reported 22 opioid-related deaths in 2014, 23 in 2015, 38 in 2016. Those three combined are 83. And last year alone, there were 85 in our region. So this is a problem that is growing, and a lot of people believe that we're not doing enough, but they don't want to see an SCS. So we agree, we're not doing enough. We need to be doing more, and this is the first step in doing that.
Yeah. Okay, Ryan, I do appreciate. Thanks for those facts there, and thanks for the work that you're doing here. Certainly, civic engagement is a good thing on both sides, and people having their voice heard no matter what side they fall on this particular argument. But I do appreciate you taking the time to chat with me this morning.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Once again, that is Ryan O'Hagan. He is the... with the a member of the Cambridge Harm Reduction Alliance. He's one of the people setting up, organizing a counter protest for the group who is protesting the locations of the safe consumption site. So we will have both sides will have representation there in Cambridge Friday night. I just had the information. So no matter what your opinions on safe consumption sites, you can go down there and you can walk to your respected side with your sign or your chant or whatever it may be. That is going to happen on Friday from 5 to 9. The protest will be staged at 150 Main Street. So 150 Main Street, 5 to 9, downtown Galt. That's where this protest and counter-protest demonstration is taking place. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more of the Jennifer Campbell Show right after this.
Is it art or athleticism that drives a 90-mile-an-hour fastball to hit a target the size of a pizza box?
Strike three, call to the outside corner.
Hungry for Blue Jays baseball? We've got them on your home of the Toronto Blue Jays. 570 News.
We are back with the Jennifer Campbell Show. Jeff Pickle filling in here. Finish out today, one more day, and then Jennifer will be back right here in this very chair I'm currently occupying come Monday morning. And we can't wait for her to return. So just before the break, we were talking about a counter-protest now showing up in Cambridge tomorrow night to show support for safe consumption sites in the downtown Galt Core area. Ryan O'Hagan dropping some statistics on us there about the peer-reviewed reality of safe consumption sites. Anything you heard there that you wish to talk about? Have you been swayed at all one side or the other? Is this argument like every other argument that the more you hear, the more you just become, you know, further ingrained in whatever opinion you had? 519-570-2545. The number, once again, 519-570-2545. Or you can reach us hands-free at *570. I want to get your take on this. Ryan was mentioning some of those stats of upstream prevention, which is can sometimes be a difficult concept to really get your head around, that a dollar saved here is, in this case, as Ryan said, $4 or $5 saved further down the road. That if you can have people consuming in a safer way, a way that doesn't expose them to the various diseases that are potentially on the street, it can save a lot of money. Also, bringing into a safe with medical professionals can help people who do want to become drug free. So that's the kind of one of those upstream ideas of harm reduction and then saving money in the long run. Some people don't buy it, of course. And that's, of course, the opinion you can have. But we got a call here from Rob. Rob, what do you think about this situation?
Hey, Jeff. I'm all for safe injection sites. Nothing against it. What makes me happy also is for every dollar we spend, we're getting four or five back. Point that gets me is it shouldn't cost us that dollar. It should cost the doctors, the dentists, the pharmaceutical companies, because they haven't followed up on the patients to make sure they're not hooked.
Yeah.
And also, why is it always costing the taxpayers money?
No, that's a great point. It is certainly not a necessarily a situation caused by, you know, the government and of course the taxpayers who make up the government. But you're absolutely right. It does then fall onto the lap. So maybe, I know there's been attempts to get more kind of reined in control over the drug industry.
I know in the States, some of the pharmaceutical companies are starting to pay into some of these safe injection sites, and it should be done up here too.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Rob. I think you're absolutely right. It shouldn't necessarily be something that falls on the hands of the public. You know, and I don't think there's many people who wouldn't agree with that. That would be a great solution to have these, you know, pharmaceutical companies who in a large part are to blame for the situation that's going on. These drugs are made to be pain relief, you know, in some cases 100 times more powerful than morphine, yet initially some of these drugs weren't, you know, they talk about OxyContin wasn't thought to be as addictive as street drugs, which clearly proved to be wrong. And then the banning, the legalization or the getting rid of OxyContin obviously opened the door to then the far more powerful stuff, which is the reason so many lives are being lost right now. So having these pharmaceutical companies pay into having safe consumption sites to help some of the people that have certainly been hurt by the drugs they're making makes a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, even if that doesn't happen, you know, it is, I think, a fortunate situation where it does fall to the public to, you know, foot that bill for some of these upstream measures to help prevent the larger costs that happen when our hospitals become more filled because of the spread of disease and because of the emergency rooms getting filled because of the constant overdoses. And of course, just that simple fact that Ryan, my guest earlier, said so overlooked, just the deaths. You know, we can talk about the money making of this all, but at the end of the day, it also just comes down to the fact that, you know, there's a human toll to this that potentially can be saved. A lot of time not, you know. You talk to people in the harm reduction field, they'll be the first to tell you that safe consumption sites are not a miracle answer. It's not the only step to be taken. It is one step that can have a big difference. It's in the mind certainly of many, it's something that's a step too far. It's seen as something making it easier for people to do drugs, inviting drug use, which is easy to see why people have that view. It just, as Ryan said, the peer-reviewed studies show is that it does have a dramatic effect on the overall outcomes of people using in communities where safe consumption is a possibility. Phone line still open. I'm curious to hear more thoughts on this subject. 519-570-2545. And it's very important to point out that not all of the criticism, not all of the people protesting in Cambridge are against safe injection sites. There are a lot of talk about being opposed to the location close to a school, which I think that's very understandable if you're a parent or for anyone, understanding why that would be concerning if it's close to a school. We have Tony on the line. Tony, what are your thoughts?
I live in Galt. I moved here a couple years ago, and my wife and myself love the area. We just attended the Idea Exchange grand opening at the old post office.
Yeah.
A lot of people out. Businesses were booming. But when things like that are not happening, the downtown core is dead.
Right.
Businesses are leaving. Okay. I enjoy the paths. We take walks frequently. We've seen some people camped out by the river in Schenectady, right by the river last week.
Yeah.
We called the local authorities. The authorities said we can't do anything about it, but all we can do is complain.
Yeah.
So my point is this. As far as the safe injection sites go, they're a good idea, but why would they put them in an area that generates revenue for weddings and movie sets? I don't understand. It should be closer to the hospital where people could be checked if something does go wrong.
Yeah, no, Tony, I appreciate that. I've heard a lot of that, and I do understand that 100%. I think what the idea is that a lot of the issues people have, like Tony, and that's a very understandable issue to take, is that the visible signs of drug use, the discarded needles and the people using in the streets, a lot of that is helped if one of those indoor safe sites is in that area. You will see, the hope is, you will see far less public drug use. It will be happening in an area that's controlled. The idea is that, of course, there'll be less needles strewn around. It's happening in that area already. Why not put it in a safe place? Of course, you know, another concern is about possibly attracting more people to that area. Again, studies are showing that it doesn't attract people to an area because they can use a safe consumption site. It's just used by people who are already in the area. So, Tony, I get it. I get it 100% what you're saying. I understand. And I think that's a very legitimate concern. But I think the argument being made would be that it helps solve many of those issues that you already have. So, absolutely, some further discussion on this always needed. My apologies to Alex for not getting you on right now. We're running right out of time. We're going to have to throw things to the news when we come up. Come back, the Mike Farwell Show, right after this.